Better in the club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes just like cherry cola. C-O-L-A cola.
Hi, this is UT Crazy from Xbox Gamer Radio, and when I'm not busy poning noobs on Xbox Live, I'm listening to Infonomicon Radio. It's tech news you need, like it or not. Infonomicon's probably best out of them all. That's one of the coolest. I don't know, it's so, the first time I did it, it was so hard to type, I kept on messing up every time I went to infonomicon.org. Now I know it down pat, but that's one of the coolest names, because it is info, and you got your nom and your icons, so.
CIA, mayhem, crisis, horrible.
All I know is this violates every canon of respectable broadcasting.
Our love for you is ticking clock, Belzerker. Would you like to suck my cock, Belzerker?
That's beautiful, man.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the facts of life. The facts of life. There's a time you got to know to go, know that the facts of life, the facts of life, when the world never seems to be living up to your dreams, suddenly you're finding out the facts of life are all about you, all about you, woo!
This is Droops, and this is Infonomicon Radio, episode 37. Today's date, May 30th, 2005. Well, I haven't done a show in a while, so bear with me. Maybe I don't know how to do it anymore. Been really busy, but I feel this show will be pretty good. A little bit of housekeeping I've got going right now. We have a new voicemail box. It's 206-984-9569. Whip out your cell phone, whip out your asterisks. Call me right now, 206-984-9569. The first person that calls is actually going to get an Asterix CD. I picked up some of these. They're cut in the shape of little Asterix. They're really, really cool. So call me right now. Get your free CD. Leave me a place that I can send it to you. And beware that I might play whatever you say on the radio. Well, anyway, moving on from that, today's topic is going to be information. Information not only needs to be disseminated, information not only needs to be learned, but it needs to be disseminated freely, and it needs to be saved. Now, when you put something on the internet, there's an old saying that says, once it's there, it's always there. What was that client the Napster guy came up with? Nutella. Nutella was up for like less than a day, and it's really done a lot for file sharing, because once it's put up, it's always out there. But what about information on your local computer? I recently was employed to set up a network for some people, and it was a small not-for-profit, they're a historical society, and they have a massive amount of data. People will bring in pictures and say, oh, this is my grandpappy working on the farm, and now it's McDonald's or whatever. And they'll take these pictures and they'll scan them into their computer. And the way it was set up was one computer, a cheap Dell, was storing all this information. Now, what if the hard drive in that computer went out? All that information's gone. What if there was a fire? All that information's gone. So we had to do a backup. And we needed to do regular backups for this information. Now, I recently hooked them up with a website, and I'm trying to teach the lady how to make websites so that she can put all this on the internet and have that as an off-site storage for all her pictures, and all these pictures can be shared with everybody. Another way we've set them up for backing up is I bought a little hard drive enclosure. It's metal, it's rugged, and we put a 40 gig hard drive in it just because they had one that was extra. I'm trying to get them to get a bigger one because the 40 gig hard drive does not back up all the data that they have. Now, they could have gotten a tape drive, which, let's say a tape drive is $300. Fancy software to run it, fancy tapes, this, that, and the other. This is a not-for-profit. They don't have a lot of money. The hard drive enclosure was like $30. They had our hard drive laying around. And I wrote a little batch file that I put on her desktop that'll back up all the data that they have. Now, they're running Windows XP, which is really nice. And they have three or four computers that are networked together and all the drives are mapped. The batch file goes to each one of these mapped drives and to the main computer whenever she clicks it, and it'll back up everything onto this drive. Well, that takes a long time to do all that, so the batch file will determine if the file's already there, if it's been modified, things like that. If you want to see it, if you want to use this batch file, go to infonomicon.org, and it's there under the text section. So anyway, there's a way of backing up data. Now, let's talk about another thing of data. I work in a shop where we get a lot of people that come in, and they don't understand how to use a computer particularly. They'll say, oh, I'm new to computers, this, that, and the other. And we don't really have a book or a paper or a PDF or anything that we can give these people to show them how to use a computer. And that's really not very good. And I'm a collector of old things, and I went looking back through some of the old books that I have, and computers actually used to come with books that told you all about the computer. My first computer was a Commodore 64. The book for a Commodore 64 goes into programming. The book for a VIC-20, Chapter 1, is how to program the computer. Of course, there were no real programs that you could buy at the time, and they needed to be able to use the computer, so it was important to include that. But go buy a computer now, and they don't even come with a compiler, if they're the standard Windows computer. You can write batch files, of course. Batch files are really, really handy, contrary to what other people will say. So, when did all this change? If you buy a new Dell, it comes with a big fold-out of how to hook the thing together. Pretty much you plug the purple into the purple and the green into the green. If you buy a copy of Windows, there's no instructions. It's all, of course, built into the operating system, but some people need a damn book. And some people want a book, and there's a big aftermarket business for this. I have an IBM PS2 manual, not PlayStation 2, it's personal system model 2, and it's a, what's that, 88 maybe it came out, 89? Had one of those when I was younger. Still have it. Still use it, actually, because that's the last major gaming platform I really enjoyed. I'm a hardcore gamer with my 16 megabytes of RAM because I upgraded. But the book for it explains everything. It has error codes in the back. It shows how to, I think you can add a math coprocessor to that. I'm not sure. It definitely shows how to add RAM to it. You know, things that people didn't know back then, and still a lot of people don't know now. Now, like I said at the beginning of the show, we're giving away information freely. So, I contacted IBM. I don't know who to contact for Commodore, but I've scanned some of these old documents, these old books, and I've put them up on infonomicon.org. Go to the tech section. You can read all about them. There's a big zip because they're really big images. And it's there. And if you just can't do the images and you need the books, I'll send you my books. I don't mind. I have a whole bunch more I'm going to scan in because I think they're really, really cool. Okay, there's other types of information. We have academic information. Let's say you're a scholar 20 years ago and you want to publish a paper. Well, there's no such thing as the internet. You have to get it printed somewhere if you want your colleagues be able to read it, and you go to a publishing company, and a publishing company has the money to start up a crazy magazine like on zoology of the Amazonian region. boom, there's a magazine. There's lots of people that'll write stuff for it. And it's all scholarly. And then, to recoup the cost for this, they charge a lot of money. Well, when they start charging a lot of money and people start paying it, they say, hey, let's charge a little bit more money and let's make us a really good profit. You know, we did a little risk. We deserve a little money. And then they continue to charge and continue to charge and continue to charge. And eventually, academic journals are sky high. We've all been to college. Well, we've all been to school. And books are very, very expensive. I went to military school. We had to purchase our high school textbooks. And, you know, $80 a pop. That's a lot for a fucking book. Well, now there's this thing, the internet. It's global. It goes around. There's things like Google Scholar, where you can put these papers and search for these papers, things like that. And it's really turning around the academic business of publishing. There's actually a raging internet era debate about it. Who should control this information and how much it should cost? Now, for decades, traditional scholarly journals have held an exalted and lucrative position. They control what's published and made available to the wider community. But with universities' websites and stuff like Infonomicon, these scholarly journals are finding their privileged position under attack. Now, this is a $5 billion global market to spread around other people's information. You know, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. Things that I do go on the internet. They're free. Not just here at Infonomicon. There's other places. And there's a lot of other people that are doing this too. And it's time for the book publishers to innovate a little bit. If they're not making money in their business, they should quit whining and say, oh no, you can't do that. This is how we've always done it, and we make lots of money off of your hard work. We must... No. You need to innovate, or you need to die out. And that's how business works. And that's how things should work in a free economy. There's lots of places that you can get good free information. You can go see my buddy Icon over at freaksandgeeks.com. They've got all kinds of free, good information. Or you can go over to docdroppers.org. Plenty of current text files, things like that. Read them. It's free. It's good information. If you're smarter than all of this, go somewhere else, find your own shit. Fuck you. And speaking of fuck you, if you hadn't noticed, Infonomicon kind of talks about computers and technology, things like that. And there's a group of people that have formed the Tech Podcast Network. And, I tried to apply to this Tech Podcast Network. And I got a reply from them, and they said, we regret to inform you that the Tech Podcast Network has decided against your request for membership at this time. In most cases, this action is not a comment on the quality of your podcast, but a decision based on the goals, member agreement, and charter of the Tech Podcast Network as decided by the current members. You may feel free to resubmit your podcast for inclusion on the Tech Podcast Network at a later date, usually 3 to 6 months, or after the reasons below have been addressed. And the reasons for my decision.
Profanity is not allowed under the Tech Podcast Membership Agreement.
Well, thank you, Douglas E. Welch. And, you know, this isn't really the Tech Podcast Network. This is the Pussy Tech Podcast Network, because y'all can't say simple things like fuck. So we are the Censored Pussy Tech Podcast Network, and that's what you are. And, you know, I'm gonna start something that's called the Official Tech Podcast Network, or something like that, just to fuck with y'all. Or maybe I won't. But I sent them a reply saying that I believe in freedom of speech. And granted, I cuss like a sailor sometimes, but I'm allowed to do that. This is the internet. This isn't the FCC, controlled airwaves. This isn't... No. This is the internet. We can do what we want. But I do see where they're coming from. If we don't self-regulate, you know, stop people like me from cussing, the FCC is going to try to regulate. Well, try to regulate this, bitch. I bought this equipment. It's regular computer equipment. I bought this website. If I can't have it at a .org, I'll have it at a .ru or some shit like that. and I'll say whatever the fuck I want. So, censored Pussy Tech Podcast membership coordinator Douglas E. Welch, fuck off. And remember, you can still call Infonomicon. What was that number again? Oh, that number. Let me see. Where is the homepage of Infonomicon? It is 206-984-9569. And if you notice when you go to the homepage, Telco Bob and I did a little spoof. Well, I'm sorry that the last episode of Infonomicon was such a political bitch. Here's a little bit more. In Memphis, Tennessee, which is kind of near where I live, before September 11th, 2001, a day which will live in infamy, federal law enforcement officers asked FedEx Corporation for help. The company had its limits in its help. It wouldn't provide access to its databases. It often refused to lend uniforms or delivery trucks to agents for undercover operations, citing fear of retribution against employees as well as concerns about customer privacy. Remember that word, customer privacy. One day you're going to look in your history book and it's going to say, this is what customer privacy was. And then people will say, well, how the hell did they get away with that? But then came the attacks on New York and Washington, and pleas from the government for private sector help in fighting terrorism. Suddenly, the king of overnight delivery, which FedEx is, became one of the Homeland Security's best friends. Or best tools, if you want to just call them a tool. FedEx has opened its international portion of its databases, including credit card details, to government officials. It's created a police force recognized by the state of Tennessee that works along the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The company has rolled out radiation detectors at overseas facilities to detect dirty bombs and donated an airplane to federal researchers looking for a defense against shoulder-fired missiles. Moreover, the company is encouraging its 250,000 employees to be spotters of would-be terrorists. Let's go over a little bit of FedEx real quick on that number of employees. It was founded in 71. CEO is Fred Smith. He's the founder. Revenue last year was $24.7 billion. Headquartered in Memphis, Tennessee. Daily volume is more than 6 million shipments. 250,000 employees. 30,000 buildings or facilities. They cover 220 countries. They have 671 planes, and they fly out of 375 airports. They have 71,000 vehicles and a 500-plus man global security force. Back to where we were. Encouraging its 250,000 employees to be spotters of would-be terrorists. It's setting up a system designed to send reports of suspicious activities directly to the Department of Homeland Security. Now, federal agents privately praise Western Union for sharing information with Treasury and Homeland Security investigators about overseas money transfers. Time Warner Incorporated America Online has set up a dedicated hotline to help police officers seeking AOL subscriber information. That'd be a really cool number to have, if anybody knows it. Call me. Tell me. Email me. Just go to the website and look around. Whatever. Think about the number. Maybe I'll guess it. And it also gives advice about wording subpoenas. Walmart Store Incorporated, which has a sophisticated supply chain security system, has been helping U.S. Customs and Border Protection agents figure out how to better track international shipping, says Homeland Security officials. Walmart's also been letting people come across the border from Mexico to go shop at really big Walmarts. There's like five of them right in a row, Super Walmarts, somewhere in South Texas. I forgot the name of the town. And it's just for people in Mexico to come over and buy stuff cheap. But they're also tracking you. Supporters of an expanded role for business and Homeland Security note, and this is true, the U.S. industry has often been a government ally in wartime. After the 1941 attack on Pearl Harbor, which is the real day that lives in infamy, U.S. manufacturers responded by retooling factories to produce tanks, trucks, planes, and munitions. Well, that's kind of interesting. How in the living shit does that compare to what they're doing? Let's say we're attacked, and then GE said, oh yeah, we're going to make a bunch of tanks, and engines for tanks, and barrels for tanks, and treads for tanks. and we send them to our troops, and our troops use them to fight, and the government pays GE, and people earn a living working there. How is that anywhere compared to, we're giving away everyone's information, we're giving up our customers' privacy? Are they getting compensated by the government, or are they just rolling over me and bitches? I believe that FedEx is a company, and I believe that FedEx, as a company, acts in their own best interest, not in the best interest of America, not in the best interest of who's a frass, but they definitely act in the best interest of Fred Smith and his shareholders. Now, cooperation between businesses and federal law enforcement agencies generally isn't advertised, and customers are seldomly aware of it. That's funny. This is like the 40th fucking time I've had to read this for Infonomicon, that customers are not aware, or seldom aware, of their privacy going down the fucking toilet. In some cases, people waive their rights to privacy when they use a particular company's service. With FedEx, the king of shipping, customers consent to having shipments inspected as soon as they hand over their packages and sign up for shipping forms. Lee Strickland, who's a retired Central Intelligence Agency analyst, pretty clever fella, and a specialist in privacy issues, says the new cooperation between businesses and government takes place in a legal gray zone that has never been tested in court. He says these relationships could undermine existing privacy laws that restrict what the government can do with information it collects directly from individuals. In general, the government can only use information for the express reason it's collected. The expressed reason that it's collected. Well, in December 2001, in Illinois, a FedEx driver became suspicious after making a series of deliveries of boxes to an apartment complex in suburban Chicago. The cartons were always the same size and same shape, and they came from the same address in Los Angeles. Worried there was something sinister afoot, the driver informed his bosses, and FedEx called the police. Well, they're worried about terrorism. And that's what this information that FedEx is giving up for us is supposed to be used. In fact, it's only supposed to use for the express purpose of defeating terrorism. Well, that does sound suspicious that boxes of the same shape are going somewhere. I got married last year, and we got all these boxes that were the same shape mailed to our house, and it was, you know, plates that we had registered for that people had bought. It's crazy that you just get packages of the same shape sent to your house. It's just unreal. Well, anyway, the police showed up at the FedEx depot with bomb and drug-sniffing dogs, looking for terrorists with the dogs. And the dogs didn't signal there was anything illicit in the boxes. So the police couldn't open them, but FedEx could, and they could show the police, because the police were right there when they did it. And FedEx did use this authority that somebody had signed away, and they opened them up. And with this police officer looking on, they opened this carton. Instead of anything dangerous, the boxes contained several hundred pre-recorded compact discs. Local police launched an investigation that eventually uncovered a CD bootlegging operation. Now back to where we were earlier. In general, the government can only use the information for the expressed reason it's collected. We think there's a bomb in that thing. The dog doesn't find the bomb, so let's open it up and whoop, just happened to be a police officer around. So that's kind of going against what they just said, but that's what people in charge will do. Governments, corporations, anything like that, they get greedy. They really only enforce things that they want to. There's a lot of selective enforcement of laws that goes around. Now, since you don't know what information is being shared and how it's being stored or how it's coded or accessed, and since you don't know what the government is looking for, there's always a possibility that it could be factored into other decisions, says Mr. Strickland. Now, Mr. Strickland, he's the CIA intelligence analyst. He is now the director of the Center for Information Policy at the University of Maryland. Now, there's a lot of companies that aren't being bitches like FedEx and just rolling over. Or maybe they're not rolling over, maybe they're just being paid off. Like OnStar, they have a policy, and that policy is to err on the side of the customer's privacy. Ooh, that's craziness. Other shippers say they have restrained from granting a level of access similar to that of FedEx without court orders. At their rival, United Parcel Services, which is the brown truck, they won't disclose information about customer shipments unless required to do so by law or regulation. The U.S. Postal Service says it doesn't provide customer payment information without a warrant. In addition, postal officials say law enforcement agencies are prohibited from collecting information from envelopes and packages sent through the mail without a court order. Government officials say that struggle against terrorism is an unorthodox fight where information and intelligence is as important as guns and bullets. Information is what a lot of companies like FedEx have in spades. Well, we have talked about information the entire show. A few more quick things. Printing information. Well, printing costs a lot. Ink's expensive. And here's a little article that kind of proves it's very quick. Hewlett-Packard Company has an online photo site called Snapfish. Snapfish is lowering its price for printing a digital photo to 10 cents and 12 cents. Now, there's a quote from Ben Nelson, who's the president of Snapfish. Mr. Nelson, it's quote of the week, y'all, quote of the week, said that even though Snapfish is cutting its price, the site would, without question, make money on the prints. Well, no fucking shit, it doesn't cost that much, you fuck. Fuck you. Ugh. Anyway, enough of printer talk, that's not really exciting. What is exciting is there's a new show. It's called Interweb Tonight. It's over a little project that Infonomicon Media is doing called PodcastIncubator.com. We're allowing people, anybody that wants to set up a podcast, to come on over. Doesn't have to be tech-related, anything like that. But it can't be stupid, at least in my opinion, because I'm paying for it and I get to say what goes. Interweb Tonight, it's hosted by DarkX and somebody else. DarkX seems to be doing all the work on it. Don't know who the other guy is. He probably does more. But supposedly they've got Kevin Mitnick, and they're working on getting Leo Laporte. And they're going to have a really good little show. And go check it out. PodcastIncubator.com/interweb. I-N-T-E-R-W-E-B. Well, this has been an Infonomicon. Exciting, exciting, exciting. One topic of information. Kind of spread out. Our website's infonomicon.org. My name is Droops. My email address is droops@infonomicon.org. We have a phone number. I've already said it enough. You can look at it on the website if you don't know what it is by now. Contact me, email me, hit me up on AIM, Skype, IRC. I'm in IRC a lot on Dalnet. I'm hanging out in the BenRev channel. And our closing music tonight is by a group called YT Cracker. It's called Doug Dig, and I'm Mickey Finn.
Silent John incremental, another silent instrumental, the nerd rap existential. People compare me to MC Chris upon a lot, but the fact is I predict them with significance. I'm the oldest geek rapper by far, say K&R. Compiling kernels, open bracket, cause I racket. MIT nerds throw your laser pen in the air and wave it all around like you had no repercussions. Now follow instructions, professor, why do discussions consist of nothing but incoherent rambling and babbling? But you just don't take notes cause you never know what's happening. I'll drop a little nugget, a tidbit if you will. There will for United States presidents named Bill.
Really?
If you run out of hit points, the game will shout.
Your life force is running out.
If you dig this, then you dug this, cause I'm all about the nerd life, word life. If you dig this, then you dug this, cause I'm all about the nerd life, word life. If you dig this, then you dug this, cause I'm all about the nerd life, word life. If you dig this, then you dug this, cause I'm all about the nerd life, word life, yeah. Let me start again, put it on like a cardigan, swing it like my name was Matt Mardigan. Which reminds me, Warwick Davis was Willow and an Ewok. Leonard Nimoy was Galvatron and Spock. That ain't typecast, I don't know what it. Talk about predestiny, nobody gets the best of me. I've only played one role my whole lifetime, the nerd lifeline, stream through Wicked Pipeline. So no one can buy mine, cause mine is original, and I write rhymes to burn on a CD, play in your mini V. Soccer mom, yodel back, yodel that belittle me. I got a sidekick, I gotta stay connected. Watch out for my D-comma, you'll get infected. And you don't wanna be one of my bots, cause I see it all like Sauron the Cyclops. And I won't hesitate to drop your whole net block if you're acting up and you're dumber than a pet rock.
I'm about this nerd life, as you can see, spreading like a virus on MP3.
STC. Shout out to Vic, Agnostic One, up with Uncle Silent John. Yeah, yeah. Nerd Life, graphing calculator, HP48G. The G is for gangster. Digital, stiff, yeah. You know how we do.